One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. We are your hosts. I'm Kim France.
And I'm Jen Romolini.
And it would appear that we're both in a bit of a mood today.
Okay. Just say what you just said to me.
I just want to go live in a hutch in the woods. Just a quiet little hutch in the woods.
Oh, my God. I'm really trying to work on acceptance. I'm really trying to work on acceptance and a bit of surrender. Like, just like, okay, well, this is what's happening now. I'll do my best. I'll do my best to make it through it.
I know. It's a weird set of circumstances to want to have acceptance around, though. I mean, it is. Acceptance is the key. I believe that, you know, some kind of acceptance and awareness of what you can't change. And there's so much that feels like we can't change it right now.
No, it's I mean, I'm just gonna tell listeners we are we're recording a couple of episodes ahead of time because we're gonna be on vacation in the end of July. So if we talk about things that are timely to this moment, they may not feel timely when this airs. Apologies. Who knows what else is gonna happen later this summer?
Yes, another shooting at a parade. It's just too fucking much. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. And I feel so scared. I feel really scared. Yesterday, I did something I hadn't done in a very long time that was good because I had talked myself into being too scared to do that. I rode the subway.
Wow. Okay.
We went out to Coney Island.
Okay.
And I rode the subway. And it was a reminder. Like, you build things up in your head. And then, you know, it's like the British during the Blitz. They just kept going on with their lives.
Yeah. I mean, I went to Catalina yesterday, and Catalina is, you know, Southern California. It can be very different than different parts of Southern California can be very different than Los Angeles, let's say, which is obviously a liberal enclave. And I was on the boat over and I was like, oh my God, what have I done? I mean, the patriotism was just like, yesterday was 4th of July. Sorry, everybody. And the patriotism was just like out in a force that I could not have anticipated, just head to toe American flags, America, America.
Isn't it a shame? I mean, I consider it like, you know, I've always thought like I loved America and felt really fortunate to be born here and had a lot of privileges. And it's one of the things I've always often felt I was fortunate about. And now I saw the same type of displays yesterday. And I thought like this, you know, it's not like I'm never out there in red, white, and blue or anything, but I was just like, God, it felt like everybody celebrating that felt like they were celebrating the Supreme Court ruling to me.
Yes, it did. But at the same time, and, you know, and understand that I'm as progressive as it gets. You know, I'm like a Bernie socialist. Like, I'm as far left as you can get. There was a thing I felt yesterday on this island in Catalina with these silly people in their silly outfits. And I did have this moment of, and granted, I was a tiny bit high. I had this moment where I was like, okay, I need to be among these people and not feel all of this hatred. Mm-hmm. And we are never going to be able to solve anything with how polarized we are, with it hatred all the time. And, you know, there was some real joy in my day in watching people celebrate in whatever way. Catalina is this very strange, it's one of my favorite places in the world because it is retro tacky, which is one of my favorite aesthetics. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like tacky from the 80s and has never really evolved out of that mm-hmm. aesthetic, which is, you know, new tacky is hideous, but like old tacky is like delightful. And it's so, it attracts all kinds. Like there was like a hipster wedding happening where like everybody was like dressed in gold. And like, and then there were like very, very traditional Mexicans playing traditional Mexican music and dancing on the street. And then there were like some like real America, like bros who were like drinking from their boats. And then there was like a marching band like of teenagers, and the guys from the boats were screaming at the tuba player to play the tuba for them. And he was. And anyway, it was like a lot of things happening in a very small space, which is also something that hasn't happened in a while because of the pandemic, where we're just all kind of on top of each other, just being ourselves and living our lives. And there was a moment that I was like, okay, I don't know where we go from here, but I need to live in some peace among all of these different people with all of their different feelings right at this moment. Because if I feel this rage every single second of the day, it's going to be ruining my life.
It's true. And I think it's limiting to not try to find common ground, even with people who you disagree with really passionately. I remember in the 90s, there was a group that got anti-abortion and pro-choice people together to try to find common ground. You know, I can understand where if somebody thought abortion was murder, they would feel that on a very visceral emotional level, you know, as visceral as anything we feel. You know, and yet, you know, probably didn't work because it doesn't happen anymore. You know, it just feels like, it just feels like the fucking Middle East. It just feels like it's irresolvable and it's going to be irresolvable forever.
Right. Right. And in saying it feels like the Middle East, not like we're living in like a war zone, but
No. Just in a place where the two parties are never going to see eye to eye. That's the only way I mean it.
Yes. Yeah. And I want to clarify that. Exactly. Don't worry. I got you. No, I know. And I saw over the weekend, I saw some like fucking turfy essay in the New York Times. And I was just like, I'm so sick of white women coming out against trans women and trans people and white feminists coming out against trans people. I'm just so fucking over it. But at the same time, I need to live my life and I need to, we all need to live our lives. I don't know what to do in this situation. Like, is it that we flee? There's, you know, historically grass is always greener. There's no better than here. It is a matter of like fighting with as much as you can and as many resources as you have and really committing to that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, having time when you're not thinking about it, when you're trying to enjoy your family, your friends, your community, to be in community and not feel so volatile, because I don't think this level of volatility is sustainable.
No, it's, you know, rage can be, anger can be very motivating, but it can also be very, 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 very corrosive. And it feels corrosive right now. It feels corrosive just all around. And I do think just some kind of, you know, someone, you know, your when your number's up, your number's up, and you've got to live like that's not the case. But that's only part of it. You know, only part of it is actual fear to walk down the city streets. The rest of it is fear of the people who are walking down those streets with us.
I know. I know. I mean, I can feel myself trying to find, because I've been so dark, I've been feeling myself trying to find like a positive spin on this, and it's awful and I shouldn't be even doing it. It's just kind of terrible. But at the same time, I think about when movements turn against each other. Like if you think about like the feminist sex wars from the 70s, there were like pro-porn feminists and anti-porn feminists. And the truth is they were actually all fighting for the same things, but they broke into these like segments. And because they broke into those segments, they were unable, part of the reason is they were unable to affect real change because they were fragmented. And I'm worried about that now too. I'm worried about that.
Because that's something the left kind of consistently does. Splinters off, can't decide on a round table or a square table, and kicks itself in the foot. You know, or shoots itself in the foot, rather.
Yes.
It's very frustrating. I mean, Republicans appear to be better at leading.
Well, yeah, because they just are like, well, this is the party line and we're all just going to march in line. We don't like Trump, but who gives a shit because he gets us what we want. Like I've been thinking about like if Joe Biden, now I know he can't do everything. Like, and also I do feel like a dummy talking about this because I certainly am not an expert in anything, right?
Me neither.
Like, so, okay. But I've been thinking about like, what if Joe Biden had come in and been like, you know what? We're going to nuke the filibuster. I mean, I guess he can't actually because he doesn't have enough votes. So he can't do that. But if Democrats had come in sort of swashbuckling and said, fuck you, we're going to nuke the filibuster. We're going to pack the court. We're going to change voting law. Like, what if they just came in and they were like, we're going to make DC a state?
No, what if they were dicks the way?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry because I don't want to alienate those people who do not share our politics,
yes.
But at a moment when so many of those politics appear to be directed right at target on our foreheads, it's hard not to.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it was just it's been a bad news summer. It's been just bad news summer. And it's really,
I'm ready for silly news. Like, summer is supposed to be the time of silly news.
I'm ready for another fucking J-Lo and Ben Affleck. Give me another one of those. Give me another stupid news. But the thing is, you can't even enjoy stupid news. You can't enjoy like the candy when like the main dish like smells so rotten. You know, it's like, I mean, you know, black people are still getting shot in hideous violence against black and brown people. I don't know. And, you know, somebody said, you know, how did they catch that shooter? How is it possible that they caught that white shooter alive when like black people get pulled over for like a traffic offense and like get shot 60 times? I don't know. I don't know what to do. I wish somebody would tell me what to do also. But in the meantime, I'm going to try to find moments of joy and keep myself not exhausted from this because I don't think I'm worth much if I'm just a cauldron of rage.
You know, a very successful woman I interviewed once told me that her motto in life was to repress and deny. And I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
But there are times when you've got to, like I always say, like put yourself on manual and try to shove that stuff off to the side. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. I mean, you know, my sister-in-law, Shireem, is an attorney and she has spent her career advocating for children in the foster care system. And it is as bleak, you know, the foster care system in this country is broken in 1,000 different ways.
they lose children in the foster care system and can't find them again. It's the stories are mind numbing. And she manages, she does it every day. You know, it's the same thing with a friend I have who works in a psychiatric hospital as an art therapist. Like, the heaviness would just get you and they somehow find a way to compartmentalize.
I think that's what we're talking about here. I just don't, the reason it's hard to make it through right now is because I just don't see how we get out of this. I can't believe we just have this panel. Like in olden times, we just have this panel of terrible people. No offense if anyone loves the Supreme Court. There's these six Supreme Court justices. But we just have this like panel, like an old-timey medieval panel who's like, yeah, you know what? I don't think people should have a right to body autonomy. Yeah, you know what? The environment. Oh, gun laws. Like, I just don't understand how this happened to us. And it happened in plain sight. We were all watching it happen. But for some reason, we didn't realize what it was going to mean.
Well, I think because it's everybody's nature not to want to believe that things are about to become as horrible as they've become.
Yes.
You know, and so we all knew it was coming. We knew it was coming, you know, we knew it was coming for sure. And then we really knew it was coming. But, you know, I just think there has to be a little bit of anarchy right now. Just a little bit of rioting in the streets, you know, just it's just, where is the rage? You know, like, I'm talking all about, you know, channeling your rage and trying not to be destroyed by it. But like, I just feel like we have to be out on the streets all the time. I don't know.
I'll tell you though why that feels hopeless, right? Because who are we fighting against? And who's fighting for us? Because now the whole thing is like vote, 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 vote. Well, guess what? We all have fucking vote fatigue. We all voted. I sent out, I don't even know how many postcards I sent to get people get out the vote for the, you know, the last election. And I made calls, I did, you know, text banking, I did everything I feel in my power, you know, keeping up my life. And I know many other people did as well, and more than I did. And it's like, well, what did it get us?
Well, it did get us a Democratic president.
It did.
It did get us that, as little as that feels like it's accomplishing right now. But I agree with you. I do think all of those things help. Everything, everyone does help, but it helps. But it is impossible not to feel helpless now.
Well, I mean, now it's like, well, if we get more Senate seats, then maybe we can do this. If it, you know, in the midterms, like, voting still matters, and I get it. But I equally get how pissed off everyone is. I mean, my whole part of Los Angeles, someone has just taken to graffitiing fuck Biden like every five steps. There's just a graffiti that says fuck Biden. And I don't think this is Biden's fault. I really don't. I think this is collectively a problem with the Democrats, like we were just talking about, not fighting as dirty because we're like, well, that's not the right thing to do. But we are no longer in a right thing to do time.
No, when a judge tells a 10-year-old girl that her pregnancy is an opportunity, we're not in normal times. Okay.
Yes.
Let's move on from the bummer.
All right, move on. Take us somewhere else.
So I read a fascinating piece that I forwarded to you about open marriage that was like, the only piece it was in the Paris Review.
Yes.
And this woman wrote it. I'm blanking on her name, but we'll put it in the show notes. We do show notes.
All right. Our show notes.
And it was really, I was not sure how I felt about it. And then I was reading our friend Kimberly Harrington's newsletter and she liked it. So I was like, okay, maybe it's okay that I like this piece.
Right.
Because
right.
I always think that open marriage, I mean, it does just sound like, I mean, it was just a really good piece because it both made you understand the idea of I'm not being very articulate.
You're being great. You're being great.
It was the husband's suggestion, which I think probably it frequently is.
Right.
And she basically said to him, what gives our marriage a better chance of surviving? You sleeping with other women or you not sleeping with other women? And she writes about the jealousy, but also like kind of being into it for him.
Mm-hmm. And she writes, though, about she's on her husband's Spotify and she notices that he has a new playlist.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I could tell by the songs that were on the playlist, they were too central to his taste for him not to have made that playlist for another woman.
Mm.
And I was just like, yeah. Forget open marriage ever. But it works for some people. I mean, it, in a world where it's hard to find someone you really connect with, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Well, I mean, is marriage friendship? Is like, how do we define marriage, right? Then it's fine. Like, really, it's just your definition of marriage, because it's hard to find somebody you're compatible with. But financially, divorce is devastating to many people. Devastating. I mean, it can sometimes change your entire socioeconomic class once you're out of the institution of marriage. It can just change everything, which is, you know, why heteronormativity is so central to capitalism, because, you know, it's like you're a unit and you buy a home together and blah, 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 and how we're more difficult to control as a society if we are unmarried and don't have children, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
very good.
Thank you. It gets into the idea of intimacy, your own personal feelings of safety, you know, because once somebody's out and having sex with other people, what does that mean in terms of your sexual health? How many people is it? How safe are they going to be? Who are those partners? You know, there's a physical safety element too.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot to it. It's like emotional safety. I think it's fine, but I'm kind of like, all right, well, that's a different kind of marriage. Like,
yeah, it is.
And
which is fine.
I,
you know what was interesting?
Yeah.
The phrase open marriage, interestingly, it's in this article, was taken from a book called Open Marriage that a couple psychiatrists, I think, wrote. And there was only one chapter about a sexually open marriage. The rest of it was about things like husbands taking an equal hand in doing the housework and childcare. It was a book about like a modern marriage.
Right.
But what survived was this one, you know, this whole notion of open marriage, you know, the sexual open marriage.
Yeah. I mean, look, I like the idea that we are redefining these institutions. I like this idea. And I just don't know if once the marriage was open, I just wouldn't want real freedom. Like, well, why don't we live in two separate houses on the same property? That sounds fucking great to me. I mean, you haven't lived with the same person for 20 years, but I have. You know, like, once we're opening it up, well, what freedoms do I really want here?
Right.
Is it sexual for me, or is it something else? Does open marriage look like I live in another part of the world for half the year because you have no interest in traveling, you know, like I don't know. And while I'm there, maybe I fuck somebody else. And then what happens then? I don't know. But maybe it's just this idea of opening it all up. You know, I'm in revisions for my book right now. And it's, I have an excellent editor. Like, just, I can't believe how grateful I am for this edit. I've never had this much care and feedback on my work before, but my editor is a lot younger than I am. You know, I think maybe not 20 years, but at least 15. Hmm. And some of the assertions I make about my life as a, you know, cisgender, straight white woman, some of the assertions I make about my experience of womanhood are not ringing true to her and her experience. Mm-hmm. And so there are things that maybe I made as like a generalization, like, well, you know, this is what happens if you're this kind of woman. And she's like, I don't know. I don't know mm-hmm. if other people think about things like that in terms of having children, in terms of, you know, finding a partner. And it's been very interesting, like reexamining my assertions and my beliefs about what life was for me the ways I thought I could live a life and how differently somebody even 15 years younger than me is thinking about it. And I think 15 years younger than that, it's like a totally mm-hmm. different ballgame.
Yeah. And that actually, you know, vis-a-vis what we opened up discussing, makes me very encouraged.
Yes. 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 I think so too. I think so too. I mean, and also thinking that we just forget that this stuff is cyclical, that yeah. this is not the worst it's ever been, that it's been this bad or worse before. And that we made our way out of these situations. It wasn't great, but we made our way out of them. You know, we found, you know, even talking about like the sexual revolution, we think of that as only one revolution, but actually there was a sexual revolution in the 30s. You know, mm-hmm. this like these are cycles of liberation and oppression. And we kind of, I at least, I find it useful to think about it in those terms and be like, okay, well, we're living in that part of the cycle right now.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think what's jolting to all of us is it wasn't all that long ago that we were literally dancing in the streets the day the election was called for Biden. And there was yeah. so much hopefulness. There was just so much hopefulness.
Right. No, and it's also, you know, the January 6th shit has been pretty intense. That's been
A little intense.
Like thinking about the, I mean, of course, like you knew just sort of just in your bones that Trump was a person who would throw his hamburger and french fries against the wall. Like you knew it with his yeah. ketchup. Like you knew he was that sort of a human. But to hear it from some, like to hear that they just all were like living and they were like, yeah, yeah, this is our guy. This guy.
Yeah, I know.
Ketchup on the wall guy. That's our dude.
That's our dude. No, it's infuriating.
It's not infuriating. It's like, do these people have no self-respect? I mean, like, you're just like, yeah, sure, sir. Thank you. May I have another? Like, it's just like, he's such on top of everything else, he's an abusive fuck. He's a yeah, selfish, he narcissistic, abusive
thin-skinned.
Fuck. Thin-skinned. Bully, misogynist, racist, like all of it. And they were just like, yeah, he treats everyone bad and me. And I'm going to keep yeah. being like right behind him.
I know. Well, he's got people very loyal. It's, you know, kind of amazing. But I just, yeah, I don't know. I can't even.
I know. Let's take a quick break from some ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And we're back.
You know what I've been thinking about? I think in part because we went to Coney Island yesterday, went to a little minor league baseball game. They have a stadium there now. I hadn't been to Coney Island in maybe 20 years, but in my 20s, I used to go there a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a music venue out there. We'd go to the Mermaid Parade every year, which was always so much fun.
Yep.
And it was like a cool
like, you know, trashy, hip kind of place to go. And yeah, it still is that way. So I went to Coney Island. I'm thinking about when I went in my younger days. And then the other night I watched the Beastie Boys documentary on Apple TV.
Okay.
Which is with the two surviving Beastie Boys. And I'm the same age as them, you know, friends I went to college with, went to high school with them. So I felt like I lived this, you know, I sort of, they're avatars from my youth.
Yes. Yes.
And I got so nostalgic and I was thinking about nostalgia, you know, and thinking about the 90s. And, you know, I wrote a profile of them for New York Magazine in, I don't know, 96 or so, maybe 95. And that did feel like a more innocent time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so, I mean, nostalgia, I think, is something I really try not to indulge in.
But did it feel like a more innocent time because we were more innocent?
Probably. Probably. But also because, you know, I mean, a school hadn't been shot up every several months since.
Yeah. 313, you know, 313 mass shootings since the beginning of this year.
Just awful.
I know. No, it did. Nostalgia is, I've been having it a lot too. I've been having a lot of nostalgia too, 90s nostalgia. And also just this thing of, well, it's strange to be in this position because I'm equally like, oh God, gross time to be alive. Oh, it was better in the 90s. Like when I watched Flirting with Disaster. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a Ben Stiller movie, Patricia Arquette. It's amazing. Lily Tomlin's in it. Alan Alda's in it. It's just, it's such a good comedy. It's so funny.
It's David Russell, right?
Yes, it is. It's David Russell before he was probably also always problematic, but this is not like one of his like weird violent movies. It's like this very funny, like madcap comedy, and it holds up. And Ben Stiller, who I think I talked shit about a couple weeks ago, I was like, God, he's funny. He's really funny. And it's a really good movie, but it is the 90s, no cell phones. And I was thinking, oh God, yeah, no cell phones, really. It's the cell phones.
It's the cell
and the social media,
the digital everything. The fact that you and I could make a career in like magazine publishing, and not have to be out there promoting our asses all the time.
Ugh.
Or feeling guilty because we're not doing that, and wondering, you know, how many followers we have to get before we get verified and everything else. I've said it before. I do miss the days when you told a friend you'd be on a corner at a certain time. You had to be on that corner at a certain time. You know, no doubt it's made the world more convenient and even safer.
Yes.
But no, I like the 90s are the time for me too. And I think it is. I was younger. I was in some ways more confident than I am now. You know, nothing horrible had happened to me yet.
Right. Many horrible things had happened to me already, but still I liked them. No, but equally, what I find profound about this time is because I have all this nostalgia, but at the same time, I'm very curious and I want to keep living. And one of the great like sadnesses that hits me every day is, oh God, how many more years am I going to be able to X, whatever X is? Oh my God, I need to enjoy this moment so much because I'm not going to be here forever. I'm very aware of my mortality in a way I was not before. And there's so much I still want to experience and do and see and people I want to be with and time I want to spend. And I just... So it's a tough position to be in because it's like, oh fuck, I miss the past, but also I want to have much of the future, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's fine to have those feelings. It's just the attendant feeling of dread.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
That's what makes it bad. The like, oh, I've got to do this, or maybe I'll never get another chance to do this, or, you know, I mean, it's the dread and the fear.
Yes. Yes. Somebody is, commented on my Instagram. I think it's a listener of the show commented on my Instagram. Well, two things. I got two comments from listeners of the show. Hello, listeners, DMs. I got one that busted me. I was drinking a margarita in a can, and she a margarita in a can. And she said, oh no, you're going to be up all night. I thought you weren't drinking. And I was like, oh fuck. Yes. Thanks. You're right. But then the second one, I've been working a lot. I have like four projects going at once, and I just am, I'm working quite a bit, and I recognize the opportunity. I'm a little resentful of it, whatever. But anyway, somebody said, you know, I just admire how, and I'm a little bit jealous of how tenacious you are about work. And I was like, it doesn't feel like tenacity to me. It feels like a compulsion. And it gets into, and we've talked about this before, it's a compulsion. Well, first off, because I'm an independent person, employee, worker, freelancer. And so there's a money pressure at all times. But then creatively, there's a lot of pressure that I create on my own, that I just keep setting up projects for myself. And then I'm like, oh, fuck, it was fun when I got it. And now I have to execute it. Oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. But it's a compulsion to be accepted professionally, creatively, to get that validation, to feel relevant. I'm very compulsive about it still. And I hope that's not always the case for me, because I don't know how much of it is just my ego, like, you know, modulating and right sizing and being like, well, could I, you know, would they, what if I pitched this column, would somebody take it? And then being like, oh fuck, they took it. And now I have to do it.
Right. I understand that.
That's not really, I don't know where the line is, where it's healthy, where the work-life balance becomes healthy, where you're like, okay, I'm making the money I need to make to, you know, feel secure, and also doing work that makes me feel at least a level of satisfaction. And that's the balance I'm always trying to get. And it's so hard to get it right.
Yeah. No, I understand. I mean, it's just the anxiety. It's when the anxiety becomes part of it. It's because the drive to keep doing new things that you have is really great. There's nothing wrong with that. It's the thing behind the drive.
Yes. It's the fear
that makes it hard.
It's the
fear. You know, but I wish I had a little bit of that. I wish I had a little bit more fear. You know?
Yeah. I guess, but I feel like you're just right with yourself. I watch you and I see you be like, yeah, I don't want to do that. And it's right, because then what I'm doing, and I'm like, I don't want to fucking be doing this. I'd like to be sitting on the couch.
Well, there was a time when I was younger, you know, when I was on staff at different magazines, when I took every single freelance assignment anybody would ever send to me, anything. And, you know, I think part of it was because it was early in my career and I wanted to accumulate clips, and because I was making $27,000 a year and that wasn't enough to live on in New York. But at a certain point, I mean, you know, I guess I just had it beaten out of me when I was an editor in chief all those years, you know, It was a position I had never pursued, and suddenly I had to perform it.
Right.
And by the time it was over, it was like, okay, well, I did that. I did that big thing. Right. You know, I don't ever have to do another big thing like that again if I don't want to.
Right.
And
right.
It turns out I didn't want to. You know, I mean, in that respect, I feel pretty right with myself. I am comfortable with the idea that my, you know, I mean, I think that this podcast is our greatest accomplishment, but I feel like, you know, I do.
I love you.
Thank you. I do. But you know, my biggest accomplishment is behind me, and that's okay with me. I mean, it's actually really okay with me. And I am, you know, I think sometimes, you know, I know people, you know, like I said in that piece I wrote, there was a long time where if you Googled me, it would autofill what happened to Kim France. And I don't know. I mean, I didn't go out and get another big job. And some part of me must regret that a little. But I also knew what the price of that big job would be.
That's the thing. That's the thing. And as you're pushing yourself, as one is pushing themselves, as I am pushing myself into new territories, creatively, I don't know what the price is going to be entering into these new projects. And then I get there and I'm like, oh, more of this shit? Like, oh God,
yeah.
I didn't know, because you don't know, because you don't. That is one thing about entering something in your late 40s, 50s, whatever, in this time of life. You set out on a new course. You don't really know what's on the other side. And some of it is good and exciting and challenging, but some of it is like, oh God, no, I didn't sign up for this. And you have to accept all of it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that we don't talk about when we talk about like pivots and reboots. And you know what? It's that grass is always greener thing. I'm going to move into this direction and do this thing. I've never done this before. It looks cool to people who are doing it. And then you might find on the other side of that, oh, there's less money in this. The kinds of people I have to work with are not the kinds of people I like. These are not my experiences. I'm just bringing up examples. Yeah. But yeah.
And but one thing that happens, like, you know, it's like the analogy I always use, like, you know, a little kid is learning to walk and they fall down and they laugh and they get back up. You know, an older person who's having to learn how to walk has a much harder time.
Right.
And I think that we fall down and get back up again easier and earlier in our careers.
Right. 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 Right.
You know, I mean, my first job was a nightmare. I had the most toxic boss.
Right.
And she wanted to fire me. And I was like, I've spent my whole life knowing I wanted to work in magazines, and now it's going to be over because, like, this woman doesn't like me.
Right.
You know, then she left and everything was fine. But, like, you know, I could handle a toxic boss in a way I don't think I could handle a toxic boss now, or would handle.
Well, you'd be so, yes, I think you're right. The one thing I will say is that you get to the result a lot faster, I find, because I work with a lot of different clients, and I have learned, without being angry, when somebody's trying to push against a boundary or if it's a toxic situation, the one great thing about this age, if you can muster the courage, I know in real time how things are going to work out normally, right? Or often. Mm-hmm. So like if I'm going to send an assignment and the deadline's unrealistic or the work doesn't make sense or it doesn't make sense for me to be the one doing it, I am closer in real time to saying that in mm-hmm. artful and careful ways. You know, the way I'm seeing this is it will make more sense if, you know, to me, I think the best use of me is and advocating mm-hmm. for myself. I can really advocate for myself, which when people used to say that to me before, just felt like some bullshit platitude, like, oh, just advocate for yourself. But actually, I've seen it a couple of times recently in real time where I've had to say, that deadline's not going to work. I can do this much in this time. I can give you this. I've had to do things like that. And that's a gift of this age. That's a gift of this age. And that does make, if the situation, if the job, and I'm kind of like backpedaling on what I just said, but if the job, the assignment, the project is not going to work out, you know a lot more quickly. And you, at least for me, I put up with a lot less if I can. If I financially can, I will try to steer it the best I can, carefully. And I like that shit. That shit's, you know, creating the right outcome for yourself is very satisfying.
Yeah. And knowing how to do that and having the confidence to do that. It's true.
Yes.
And the confidence to know when you need to walk away and when an opportunity, like, you know, I didn't walk away from any opportunities. It was like, yes, 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 yes.
Yes.
And being able to like see the warning signs around the edges.
Yes. Yes. And like, you know, and thinking about, well, do I need this for survival, or is this just something that I think will look good, or, you know, look good to the outside world, or, you know, all of these different things that you're weighing as a freelance person, or, you know, can I just not please that person? They wanted it, you know, Friday, but I can't get it to them till Wednesday unless I really fuck up my life. And what's more important here, me and my life and my family, or pleasing this person with an arbitrary deadline that just doesn't, that doesn't have to be.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's fucking interesting working as an older person. It's just, it's different, man.
Yeah, it is.
It's different.
It is. It is. So I'm watching this show that's kind of amusing.
Tell me.
Not great. Not great, but kind of amusing. It has Maya Rudolph in it.
Okay.
And Adam Scott. It's called Loot.
Oh, okay.
And it is based, it definitely feels like it's based on Mackenzie Scott, Jeff Bezos' ex-wife.
Okay, okay.
You know, it's about a woman who's married to a tech bajillionaire, and he leaves her for another woman, and she suddenly has all this money. Mm-hmm. And she goes in, and she didn't even know that they have a family foundation, but they have a family foundation. And she's like, okay, I'll go work there in that way that rich people do. Right. So she, it's sort of about like all the people in this foundation who were trying to get work done. And this like woman who just has had no conception whatsoever of what real life is like for the length of her marriage and is stepping back into the world. And
okay.
It's just, you know, it amused me. It's not a great show, but it is an amusing show.
That actually sounds really fun. I would like an amusing show, just like a nice, easy, amusing show. I haven't really been watching anything. I watched Jaws last night.
Always good.
It's really amazing. It's like sometimes it's just fun to go back to something and have the anticipation of all your favorite scenes and get excited and think, oh, well, that hasn't happened yet. I'm still going to get to watch that. That's, you know, so.
We watched Heavenly Creatures a while ago. Did I talk about this ever?
No.
Heavenly Creatures? I think I feel like I did. Kate Winslet and Melanie Lynskey both had their first roles.
I think maybe we talked about this like a million years ago is what I feel like. But maybe
Oh my God.
No, but not a million years ago, like 2 months ago. Who knows how many years?
Was a while ago that we watched it.
Okay.
But there's one scene in it where they're like, they're going to kill the mom.
Okay.
And she's in a, because they kill one of the mothers. It's based on a true story. I'm not giving anything away.
Okay, great.
And they're sitting in the car.
Yes.
They're going to take her on a hike in the woods, which is where they're going to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
And beforehand, they stop at a little, you know, bakery shop or something, and they're having desserts, and you know, they've got the little tray of desserts, and the mother reaches for another one and then goes, oh no, really I shouldn't, and the girl goes, go ahead mom, treat yourself.
Oh.
It's so creepy.
It's also fun to watch actresses that you're most familiar with now and watch them younger. Like it was really fun to see Patricia Arquette in Flirting with Disaster and just remember what she looked like in the 90s. And you know, it was, that was very cool, and see her just, you know, and it's just fun to see. It's fun to see people of different ages. I feel like that's not a very interesting point at all, but that's a case I'm making.
Well, you know, what's true is like both Kate Winslet and Melanie Lynskey are prettier now.
Yes, I think that was maybe part of what I was thinking, though I had not said that. I don't know what else, Kim. What else?
I don't know. Well, here's some things we can do. We can answer some questions.
Yes.
We can read a couple reviews.
Okay.
Okay, you ask questions.
Okay. What is your thinking about wearing shorts these days?
Funny. You should ask, listener. Because just yesterday I was like, I'm going to this minor league baseball game. I don't feel like wearing a dress to the baseball game. I want to wear shorts. But the shorts I like don't fit me right now. So I was like, okay, I will do the thing I know is never the right thing to do. I said, Paul, I'm about to take some perfectly good pants and try to turn them into shorts. Perfectly good pants. I destroyed two pairs. Two pairs, and was about to start cutting off a dress. And Paul was like, I think you told me to stop you if you did this.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Perfectly good pants turned into shorts. This is amazing. An amazing thing that happens. Oh, I haven't done it in a long time.
I've just ruined. I mean, they were two pairs of pants I probably was never going to wear again. They weren't fancy. It's not like, you know, but they could have met a better end than being turned into shorts I'll never wear.
Well, so wait. So end of that story, you did not wear shorts.
I didn't wear shorts, okay. And I find it impossible. I love the look of shorts, like longer shorts with a button-down shirt. I think that's a great look. But I have a very hard time finding those shorts.
Okay. So I have lots of thoughts on shorts. Many, many thoughts on shorts. So just let me get this out here. I have skinny legs, but they are still getting crepey above the knees and also tons of spider veins. Like I've had them removed over the years and then they just come back. So these are not like the prettiest legs. I've decided I do not give a shit. These are my legs and I want to wear shorts. Okay.
I had a similar realization this weekend about sleeveless dresses.
Fuck it.
It was too fucking hot to care.
Fuck. That's really where I'm getting to. And I think this is the right place to be. Like, sorry, my body's not for your consumption. I want to be comfortable. And this looks cute. Okay. Cute to me. So shorts and button downs, honestly, you could wear a pair of bike shorts and a button down with a good pair of like lug sole sandals. It's actually a pretty cute look. If the button down is oversized enough, I did that the other day and it was pretty cute. They were like a thick bike short that came down to right above my knee with a lug sole black sandal and an oversized button down. Cute. Second shorts. Big Bud Press makes cute shorts. I'm sorry, Big Bud Press. There's a little bit of elastic in the back. They're just like a fine, like just basic looking, like khaki kind of short. They come to around the mid thigh. They come in all sizes. They're cute with a bunch of different shirts. And also cutoffs, man. Cutoffs are still cute. They don't have
cutoffs
to be like,
are cute.
It doesn't
well,
have to be like
a
going
to,
yeah, it wasn't, it's not like you need to go, it's not like you're going to like a fancy like dinner in cutoffs, but like cutoffs could still be cute as an older person. I'm on cutoffs. I'm a fan.
I support you in that 100%. I don't know that they're going to work on me at the moment, and I'm certainly not going to destroy any more pants trying to make them.
Bring them.
But
to
I do
your,
agree with you. I think they're cute.
Bring them to your. Bring them to the tailor to cut them.
I know. I think in life, you're either a person who brings things to the tailor or you're not.
I'm not. I recommend everybody bring shit to the tailor, like, I don't know, once a week. And I think I've brought a thing to a tailor like three times.
Well, because the most stylish people I know swear that that's why their clothes look good on them, because they buy something, you know, maybe they buy something cheap at a vintage store and then they go and spend the money on making it fit right.
No, I mean, and those people probably have spreadsheets. I don't know. Like their closet is organized. Like the chaos over here is not conducive to a tailor. But I feel like that's an easy thing. And if you have a tailor at your dry cleaner, it's not something fancy that you have to do. You just have to be like, could you cut these? And then you show them where.
Right. True.
But I think my feelings on shorts are very, very pro. Okay. Next question. Can I not attend my sister-in-law's second marriage out of state, no direct flight, I have three young kids, without being branded a supervillain? Happy for my husband to go, et cetera. If we're not a relative, I'd send cash and a card along with my regrets. I don't want her wedding to be forced to be my forced annual vacation. Do I have to suck it up?
You know, I think that really depends on the relationships. You know, what kind of relationship? I certainly can relate to not wanting to go, but it's a tough one.
It's a tough one, but the way travel is right now, three young kids, out of state, no direct flight. I mean, this person is not making it very convenient for guests, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the best relationships come out of well-set boundaries. And I think that if she explains this to her sister-in-law kindly, if this is really her stance, I think it's better for her not to go than to go and resent it.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe in explaining it, you offer up something else. That's always good. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm so sorry. We're not going to be, the whole family can't make this. We're sending along my husband, of course. I would love to celebrate with the two of you, do something special, whatever that special thing is, X.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might go because of the guilt, but I do recognize that I don't know. I don't know. It depends on, it depends on the family dynamic.
Yeah, I think it really depends. It depends on her relationship with the sister-in-law.
Yes.
And the husbands.
Yes. Looking into therapy for the first time seems like looking for, I think she means a psychiatrist, is a better idea in case a referral for a prescription is needed. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, the more cost-effective thing to do if you were looking for therapy is to find a therapist, you know, a psychologist, even a social worker, and then have a psychopharmacologist who you really trust, who is in some communication with your therapist.
That's exactly what I did. I mean, because a lot of the reasons, you know, the main thing is you want to find someone who you feel connected to and who you can also afford so that you can go consistently. I think mm-hmm. that's the most important, like 1-2 of therapy is the consistency and someone you feel connected to. It doesn't matter if they have a medical degree because they can help you get that like occasional psychiatrist referral, which is what I have right now to get ADHD meds. I meet with her every 3 months, and that came through my therapist, who is not even a doctor. He's a social worker, really. I mean, that's his entire degree. But at the time I got him, I really liked him, and I knew that he was an option that I could afford to go every week. And that was the most important thing, is getting in there and having some consistency with it. Because if it's someone super expensive, I mean, there's so many reasons why you're going to try to avoid going, especially as the therapy gets harder. And if there's like a really big price of admission, that might be a deterrent that you don't need.
I think it's also important to kind of think about what you want from therapy at this point in your life. Do you Yes. want to go to the kind of therapy where you're talking about your childhood and your father and how he fucked you up and how angry Right. you are and all of that? Right. Or do you want to go for a more behavioral approach that's more about problem solving and working through behavior to make your mind different?
Right. Or like
processing. I'm so
articulate. No, you're fine. No, but me too. We're fried. Or like processing trauma, you know, do you want to find like what explicitly are you looking for? You know, my therapist also does EMDR like that. That may be something you want to explore. It kind of depends on what, but the bottom line is you don't need a psychiatrist. Don't think that that's the only way in to get to get meds.
Right.
Okay. So we have a bunch of new reviews we're going to read before we go.
Should I read a couple?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. This one is from Sandamom, and she says, "Absolutely love this podcast. This is the podcast I didn't know I needed. Thank you for your wonderful banter, truth bombs, insights, and laughs."
Nice. Thank you, Santa Mom. And thanks everybody for leaving these reviews. I didn't say that before. It means the world to us, and it helps people find our show, and that helps us keep going with the show. Okay. This is from Nan Lee B, who says, "Stay well, Kim. Kim, happy to hear your procedure is behind you. Take care. Enjoy the holiday weekend. A grateful listener."
Very nice. Thank you for caring. I'm very glad my procedure is over too. Okay, here's one from Marta in Michigan. 5 stars. "Hey, fabulous women. I love listening to your podcast. It feels like I'm listening to two friends of mine talking about topics that are important to me. Our values are aligned, and I love your senses of humor. Thank you for being so open and honest. If you need a friend in Benzie County up north Michigan, you have one. Keep up the good work. I look forward to hearing about Kim's makeover and Jen's review of Inky products. I also want to read Jen's book. Hope you're both enjoying summer. Marta Chabazi."
Thank you, Marta. While we're here, so it's pronounced Inchy. I didn't know that. I found somebody who pronounced it on the interwebs. Mm-hmm. Their products are fine. They're fine. There's nothing bad about them. They're not my favorite. It's still Shani Darden for me all the way. The eye creams are pretty good. I really do think that all these skincare companies that are using silicone, I don't like it. I don't like the way the sliminess of it or the tackiness of it. Yeah. I don't like it. But the products are I think the eye creams are actually pretty good. So that's my review of that. And Kim's makeover, what's our update on that, Kim?
I have had so many offers. I don't even know what to do. It's an embarrassment of offers.
That's an incredible place to be. What a good problem to have. Okay. Appreciate the candor. This is from Chickadees and Hummies. Appreciate the candor. I've listened to EIF for a while and appreciate the host's candor and authenticity. They truly seem to bring their full selves to the podcast and take feedback earnestly when it comes in. And there will always be feedback when you're thinking aloud as they seem to. I thought about this, side note, I thought about this review I saw the other day and I thought, oh, I guess people don't just think out loud.
I thought about that too when I saw it because I thought, oh, is that what we do?
Is that what we do? I think we do. I think that we just
I think
other people like are more cautious in the things they say and more, perhaps more thoughtful. being in my early 40s, I value being a fly on the wall and hearing about all the great things I have ahead for me. They touch on so many different topics. Truly like listening to them chat.
I love hearing about people under 40 who listen to this podcast.
I do too. I very much do too. If you're, I also, did I tell you that we got a letter from a man?
From a man?
Yeah, there was like a man who left a review or something, a DM something. I forget when. But if you're out there, man, the one man, I love you. I think it's so incredible like that you want to know about this shit. I'm really happy to have you.
keep coming back.
Keep coming back. Okay, on that note, thanks for listening to Everything is Fine. We're your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
If you like the show, like we just talked about, please rate and review it on all the platforms, particularly Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you want to support the making of the show, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/everythingisfine. We do exclusive blogging content there and special episodes, and we have live monthly events. If you want to find the show, we're on social media. We are at EIF Podcast on Instagram. We have a robust Facebook group. We're on Twitter. We're on LinkedIn somehow. I did put us on LinkedIn once. You can email the show at everythingisfinethepodcast@gmail.com. You can find Kim on her blog, girlsofacertainage.com. You can find me on tinyletter.com/Jennifer Romolini. The show is mixed and edited by the great Natalie Rivera, and we'll talk to you next week.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.